Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 177 of Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell and Johnny Stofko joins me.
177, Tristan Cannell, the Vision Board Podcast. It's been 161 episodes since since this next guest.
I think it was somewhere in there. I think I said 16. I could be wrong.
We'll keep it at 16.
Dr. Corey Peacock, one of the boys, coming back on. It's good. We've had return guests. Obviously, Chris Algieri's come back. The actual CEO of ISSN with Dr. Antonio, he's come on. So it's a nice little connection. They're great guys, not only knowledgeable, but, you know, decent human beings. And, you know, sometimes you can get guys that are just, you know, academics and they've got no personality. But I love Corey because he's got personality. I love the stuff that he's doing, and he just loves it so much.
Yeah, and you also love Corey because I'm an Ohio guy, and Corey's an Ohio guy, and you have a deep love for Ohio boys, and, you know, I appreciate it, Tristan, so you like how I did that?
It's all right. They're probably the second best state in the world behind New South Wales for athletes.
And you know what's crazy? Look, guys, if you think I'm bullshitting you, Google image New South Wales and Google image Ohio, and it's creepily identical in its shape. Have you ever done this?
No, I haven't.
It is crazy. But anyway, Corey is from where I'm from. He went to Kent State. I went to Pitt. And if you guys have been listening since Jump, he, you know, Black Zillion strength coach, man, you know, they dissipated, still with Henry Hoove. It's awesome to keep seeing Corey evolve with his athletes, keep getting better. Usman is now a contender to be a champ. Mm. You got Hot Chocolate, who's always in wars. He's working with Rockhold. And like you said, it's good to have a guy who's educated, who's in the trenches, but also with an awesome sense of humor.
Yeah, he's doing those great. I keep seeing all those ISSN presentations. I'm looking forward to actually sitting down and seeing him live in person, because I've been hearing some great things from a lot of people, how good he is on stage as well. So
Big boy.
Yeah, he's athlete, very big.
For sure.
I don't want to go to the gym with him. He's going to smash me.
Dude, you're a monster in the gym.
Nah.
What are you talking about?
Corey looks like he's a big dog.
This is coming from a cat 2 years ago. I'm walking through Martin Place with you, Tristan. I'm like, yo, man, are you going to do that fight? Are you going to take a fight? I don't know, man. I'm afraid I might hurt someone. So don't give me this shit that you're going to go to a gym.
Cocky boy.
Yeah.
I'm retired.
Yeah, you retired? You hung him up?
No, I'm only joking.
Yeah, keep that chin down and throw that hook. Step on it.
Yeah. Guys, before we get Corey on the show, just a big shout out. Thank you for tuning in today. And also, if you haven't subscribed yet, please log on to either iTunes or Stitcher. You can find us at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. It's a free subscription. And if you can, please leave us a 5-star review. Helps us grow in the rankings and little things like that. That just helps us get seen by more people. We can reach more people and we can spread the messages of great people like Corey.
Yeah, and when you guys are done with this episode, share it, copy it, retweet it, reshare it, tag us in it. We appreciate you.
Yeah,
this thing is
absolutely.
It's a slow ascension, but we're in it for the long run. And I'm a guy that I love the grind and I love what we do. And this is an awesome episode for you guys. So share it.
Hell yeah. All right, guys, let's get straight to it. I introduce Corey Peacock. All right, guys, our special guest is Corey Peacock. Corey is a performance coach and exercise physiologist who has worked closely with professional athletes across MMA, boxing, NFL, and the NHL. He's graduated from Kent State University with a PhD in exercise physiology, while he's also an assistant professor at Nova Southeastern University. He's one of our returning guests, and we're glad to get him back on. Corey, welcome back, brother.
Very excited to be back on, guys.
Yeah, Corey, man, it's a pleasure to get to chat with you once again. We wanted to talk, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the MMA scene. You know, you're working firsthand with a lot of the most dangerous athletes in the world. Maybe share right now some insights as the year's come to an end, who, you know, some of your guys are getting ready, maybe some that are in camp, maybe some that are about to fight.
Sure, yeah, it's going to be a really busy end of the year. As you guys are aware, UFC was just out in Australia, so I had Nick Lentz out there, pulled off a great submission victory over a really tough Will Brooks opponent, so that was definitely a highlight. We have Alan Crowder making his UFC debut up in Detroit. We're going to have Danny Roberts fighting up in Winnipeg. Kamaru Usman is going to be fighting the 30th. Michael Johnson will be making his 145-pound debut. Super excited about that. Michael Chandler with Bellator. And we're hoping Volkan Ozdemir, something, you know, comes along soon in this light heavyweight division, whether it's DC, whoever it might be. You know, so we're looking forward to seeing what he has in store next as well.
Corey, are we allowed, are we going to see Ozdemir? I know he's been in the news the last couple of weeks. And down in Australia, Tristan and I never know what, you know, media headlines to believe. We just read that he got into kind of an altercation. Is he facing any sort of suspensions, or is everything still on track for a big fight in the light heavyweight division for him?
You know, as of right now, from what I've heard from him working with him on a daily basis, everything should be on track once this gets figured out. Other than that, I really don't know much of the details within it, other than just what you saw in the news, an altercation where, from his standpoint, he stood up for what was right, and, you know, that's kind of really all I know about it thus far.
Hey, Corey, just, you know, you mentioned so many fighters, and there's so many fighters just in your stable at the moment. Can you talk to us just a little bit about how you split your time with each one?
Yeah, you know, one of the big things that I do when I start with these athletes, when we start to enter camp, I'm going to do a lot of evaluations, looking at physiological evaluations along with certain monitoring instruments. With these fighters, what I'll usually do is try to find similarities or, you know, similarities in these assessments where there may be two athletes that have, you know, similar performance things that we're trying to improve throughout this camp, also similar game plans. And what we'll do, if the dates kind of align, we'll try to put and group these fighters together based on that. So at any given period, I'll probably have anywhere from about 6 to 10 groups running, depending on who's in camp, who's out of camp, and where we're at with those within those camps as well. So it's definitely really hectic, definitely dynamic in how it works. But up to this point, looking at the results, you know, things have been great so far.
Corey, I know Danny Roberts, Hot Chocolate's one of your guys. That division he's fighting in is chaos, and I want to, coming from a coaching perspective, that fight he had with, you know, Perry, Mike Perry,
sure,
it was a absolute slugfest. It was a war. It could have went either way, and it was almost one of these fights, guys listening at home, that any punch could have ended the fight. You know, it didn't end, you know, Roberts didn't get the victory there. But from your perspective as a coach, when you have a guy that's been in a war like that and they lose, where is your kind of checklist reevaluating them for their next fight? Is it a mental thing? Are there holes in the physical game? Talk about that with us.
Sure. You know, Danny and I are very close. He's a guy that, you know, we carpool to and from quite a bit. So, you know, we have a really good relationship that way. And one of the things that I've said to Danny, and from all of us, as, you know, from a coaching standpoint that we've noticed with Danny, is Danny's response to that fight was the response that every fighter should be, I mean, I guess the response that they should be going through after this to get better. Danny took this, Danny learned from this, and I believe Danny is very much so a better fighter because of this. You know, he's fixed some holes in his game, you know, and that's the thing, like you said, you saw that fight.
Yeah.
Whether or not there was a hole in anybody's game, I don't think there was. It was just a matter of who was going to go down first. You know, those two guys, and like Danny Roberts, anytime he fights, if anybody that's ever watched him, he's in a war every fight because that guy leaves everything he has out there. But his response to this Mike Perry camp, or to the Mike Perry fight, was something where it wasn't who's to blame. It wasn't point the finger here. It wasn't this. It was identify the true sources of what he can improve on and move forward. You know, and with somebody like Danny, I think there's a lot of good role models in the gym. I think Michael Johnson is one of them, who's fought, you know, everybody in the top 10, you know, some great wins, some tough losses. And Michael Johnson's one of those guys as well, that very first Monday after his fight, he's back in the gym saying, okay, let's move forward. And I think that's one of those things where you really look at this and, you know, make sure the athlete heals, make sure mentally that they're okay to move forward. And once they are, it's a new fight. And, you know, I think the nice thing about having, you know, like you said, the stable of fighters, there's so much experience in that room that you know, that there's nobody in there that's undefeated. There's no, you know, everybody in here has suffered a tough loss like that at one point throughout their career. And, you know, that's just, it's good to have those fighters to be able to really put it into perspective for these, you know, these up and coming guys.
Yeah. Danny's British, eh?
Yeah. From the UK.
Yeah, I thought so. What's that? Because you just talked about carpooling and you guys having a special bond. Is it for you at that highest level, is that easiest to coach someone when you do have that bond compared to someone that just doesn't give you anything and just turns up to the session?
You know, it really is. I've even had people, I think this, you know, I've had this conversation where people have asked me, you know, coming from a collegiate football coaching career into this, you know, this professional mixed martial arts, what are the things, you know, that I like about MMA or prefer with this? And that's just it. You know, you can build a great relationship with these college athletes, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, you are a authoritative figure because, you know, not only do they have to come out and play football for you, but they also have to go to school. They have to make grades. They have to stay out of trouble. They have to do all of these things. Where with these MMA athletes, you know, these you know, people like Danny have families, have children, have other people that they're supporting. So the pressure from a coaching standpoint isn't to make sure everything in their life is in a good position. It's really to focus on making sure that they're getting the best out of the mental and physical preparation for these fights. And, you know, like I said, it's really good to create a strong bond with these athletes. And that's really why I like this professional scene a lot better. You know, to kind of answer your question, though, you know, I have different relationships with every athlete.
Yeah.
You know, and just personalities are different. For me, more than anything in the world, I'm going to, you know, definitely let performance speak for how we do together. You know, I have certain athletes that I've worked with 4, 5, 6 camps, and there's not a lot of personal communication. We don't know a lot about each other on a personal level, but we're winning. You know, so at the end of the day, as long as the work's getting done, as long as the performance is still improving and we start to understand one another and work together professionally very well, you know, I'm okay with that. Everybody's a little bit different, but yeah, I definitely do enjoy having, you know, these strong relationships with the majority of the athletes that I work with.
Yeah, Corey, for the last 10 years, man, the MMA landscape with, you know, gyms such as ATT and Jackson's and, you know, the Black Zillions, which we're referencing, a lot of these guys are really close with each other. You talk about Michael Johnson, Danny Roberts. Could you talk about what happened down there? You really don't see a lot of people talking about it. And maybe just focus on the mindset or the mental impact it either had or didn't have when that gym kind of dissipated and guys kind of went their separate ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're right. As big of a team and as big of a name as that was in the MMA world, one thing I've realized about this MMA scene, it's really forgetful. It's really unforgiving when you think about those things. You know, people take some time off and people forget about it. And it's crazy to me how quick this sport progresses. You know, literally, I would say last year at this point is pretty much when the end of the Black Zillions started to come to fruition. And, you know, really, ultimately, it was just, you know, a little bit, like, from what I've seen in the news as it's kind of progressed, you know, a little bit financially, some differences between management, staff, fighters, and all of those things. And realistically, all it was at the time, I guess what these athletes needed provided wasn't necessarily available through, you know, through the Black Zillions umbrella as they were kind of changing facilities and different things like that. I was also a part of that for a little bit of that transition. Ultimately, the team dissipated. You know, I think a few fighters still working together, possibly under that umbrella. But realistically, now you've kind of looked at the scene, people have moved elsewhere. The majority of the guys that I'm coaching right now are working out of Hard Knocks 365. Some of the coaches there would be Henry Hooft, Greg Jones, Kami Barzini from formerly at American Top Team. And I would say the fighters, you know, it's definitely some of the Black Zillions fighters. Some of American Top Team fighters have made their way over. And then outside of that, you're having a lot of different up-and-comers starting to show up at the facility because of the, you know, the dynamic nature of it. So it's really cool. It's a really cool place, really good opportunity. Not really a team by any means, in terms of like a team name, but definitely a very strong team feel, you know, at that facility.
Yeah, you mentioned Michael Johnson before. He's got a fight coming up, you said?
Yeah, so he's going to make his 145-pound debut. His will actually be middle of January.
That's a step up, right?
No, he's
down.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Johnson's going to 145.
What was he, 55?
155. And yeah, I don't mean to hijack the question, but yeah, what were you going to say with the...
Yeah, just let Corey just keep going.
Oh, no, I thought, what were you guys going to say?
I was going to bring up the fact with Michael how going from 155 to 145, you know, he has wins over Tony Ferguson, the champ. He has wins over Dustin Poirier, Gleison Tibau, Lozon. When you have a guy like that who's been so dominant, and he has his losses as well, and they drop the weight class, is that a sign? Is he just trying new things out? Is it because of the weight cut? And if so, when he drops those 10 pounds, from your perspective as a coach, what tools are he? Is he going to lose anything? Is he going to lose power? Is he going to gain speed? Could you share with the listeners what happens when you have a guy dropping down like that?
Okay, so in my opinion, it's one of those things too. When Michael Johnson comes up to you and says, you know, should I drop to 145? It's very easy, like you said, to say, why? You've beat people like Tony Ferguson. You go out there and brawl with people like Justin Gaethje and all of these guys and put on a show every time you fight. Do I feel confident that Michael Johnson can go out there and perform and beat anybody at 155? I do. But I also feel the same way at 145 pounds. I mean, the guy's just dangerous. So when he's presented with some of the ideas, and this is something that's sort of been in his head, I think, for a little while now, the thought of maybe being able to compete at 45. You know, we've taken him into the laboratory looking at how much water he's holding, looking at muscle composition, looking at body composition. We've tracked his last four weight cuts to a T, looked at the exact weight cut, the exact rehydration protocol, weight, fight night, and all of these things. Based on the plan that we have put in place, Michael Johnson is going to be the exact same fighter on fight night that stepped into the octagon at 155 that he will be at 145, including the same exact weight. Yep. So realistically, what are we going to do? We're going to do a little bit more water manipulation. We're going to pull his camp weight down just a little bit throughout the bulk of his camp. But realistically, I think he's going to be the exact same size come fight night, same speed, same power. And I think it makes him a really dangerous 145-pound fighter.
Yeah. You know these tools that you're talking about to help you analyze, like when you first got in the game, let's say 10 years ago, when we're talking about 2007, do you think you could have done it back then and done it as accurately as you're talking about now?
No, there's no way. You know, just even these weight cut protocols and procedures and things that have adapted over time and the resources, you know, you guys have had so many great guests on your show between people like Algieri and Jose Antonio and, you know, the list goes on and on of all of these guys that have been great resources of information, technology, and things like that for me without being able to kind of grow up in this alongside some of these, you know, some of these great practitioners and coaches out there in the sport. I wouldn't have been able to do it then. I just think the understanding I have of the sport and the resources, the tools that I have now have made it that much more efficient. And, you know, in my opinion, looking at some of the problems that you're seeing out there with weight cuts, what we've been able to do within our camp, within that group of individuals and colleagues, you know, we have it down to a science. We have it down to a very safe science in which these athletes aren't having issues, are performing at their best, you know, and that's, it's really important when you look at the longevity of these athletes, the sport in general.
Yeah, off air, Tristan and I were talking about some of the underlying, maybe issues with the UFC, for instance. Coming from a fan perspective, when it comes to the weight cut, it's not something that Dana White has kind of like broadcasted to even talk to the media about. When you have a guy who's fighting at 185, it's like the fans don't even know. They could be cheering for this guy at 185 his whole career, and they don't even know how heavy he really is. One, normally, and two, the day after when he's actually in the octagon. My question comes from a good friend of mine, she fought last weekend on the UFC Sydney card, and she's a small strawweight. Like her normal weight class would probably be an atom weight. So the Commission of New South Wales with her opponent weighs in, I guess they get a heads up maybe 12 hours before the weigh-ins that she knew she wasn't going to make weight, her opponent. So the commission told her, well, stop cutting and start putting weight back on. And it's like, hold on, you know, by the time they weigh in, the girl is 7 pounds over. 24 hours later, by the time they fight, the fighter is probably 15 pounds over. And is that something that's just like from commission to commission? I know you lose 20% of the purse, but from a level playing field, you'd have to think that's dangerous for the opponent.
That's extremely dangerous. I've never heard of that, like, to that extreme.
Yeah, right, it's chaos down here.
And it was a female, so I'm assuming that's, what, 115, 25, or 35?
Yeah, it was 115.
At 115, you look at 7, you know, you look at 7 pounds, that's 5%. Like, that's way overweight. I mean, I would have to imagine, I haven't heard of that, so that has to be the regular, you know, that has to be the regulatory body, whoever that is, through, you know, wherever that was in Sydney. But that's absurd. I mean, that right there, like missing weight in general, that's absurd. I mean, like you said, we have got, you know, we have Rockhold who's training with me, you know, on and off when he's going back and forth. And he's a very big 185 pounder. But like I said, he, you know, when it comes time to getting into camp and making weight and all those things, there's no problem. You know, he makes the weight and he refuels. But yeah, like you said, in her case, if she was doing it right and was on track to make 115, the fighter you were talking about, you know, she probably went into the octagon realistically, maybe 125 at the most, maybe 130, if you know, with them telling her to start eating or whatever. But her opponent was probably way heavier than that, and that's just not even safe. Nor is it fair. I mean, it's just not safe. It's not fair. But I've never heard of a situation like that before.
Yeah, it just seems like some of the logistics and some of the rules are still kind of – the sport is so new, you don't really see a cut definition of consequence when something like that happens. Like for your boy Luke, for instance, he fights at 185. Yeah. Could you share with us what that – like how long does it take him, one, to get to 185? When do you start that weight cut? When he starts refueling for the fight in the octagon, what is he weighing then? And then what is his normal walk-around weight?
Sure. You know, and I can just give you – I can really give you pretty much – like, you know, we have somewhat of a standard where we want all of our athletes, you know, and I can kind of share that with you guys just in general. Looking at any of our athletes, any weight division, 8 weeks out going into camp, we want our athletes about 10% overweight.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're looking at 85, you know, put 18.5 on that. You know, looking at our 170 pounders, you know, that's pretty easy at 17. You know, we want them at about 187 going into camp. So they're about 17 pounds over, you know, 10%. We like for them to carry that roughly about 4 weeks through the high volume portion of their camp, you know, the first half of their camp. Throughout that progress, we like to watch them drop about roughly 2%. We'd have them at about 8% over fight week for the duration of their camp, you know, the last 3 weeks of, you know, high intensity, more fight specific training, because that's realistically where they're going to fight on fight night. So let's stick with that 170 or if we had them at 8%, we'd want them at roughly 183 for the last, you know, 3 week push of their camp. Going into fight week, we'd like to watch them drop that to roughly about 7%, going into fight week. So, you know, that puts them at basically like 181.5. And that leaves you that week to lose that 11.5 pounds for that 70 pounder. Realistically, leaving that 5% for the last 24 hours. So looking at 17, cut that in half. You know, you're looking at about 8.5 pounds that we're going to cut those last 24 hours, maybe a little bit less, depending on the circumstance, travel, and those kind of things. But realistically, that 8% number that I gave you that we try to keep during the bulk of that camp, that's where we want them to fight. So in the sake of a 170 pounder, you know, we would feel confident with them coming out at about 183 to 184 pounds come fight night, you know, 24 hours after that weigh.
Yeah. Corey, how do you handle like the psychology part of it? You know, they're dropping weight. They're probably stressed about the fight.
their hormones are going crazy. What do you guys do to handle that sort of side of things?
You know, again, everybody's a little bit differently. You know, this is definitely what I will say. You know, Coach Greg Jones, who I've mentioned, wrestling coach of ours, he's a three-time national champion, two-weight division national champion out of West Virginia. He has a, you know, he has a degree and some graduate school in sports psych. I definitely say he's one of the centerpieces, especially during fight week, to be able to really communicate with these guys. Not to mention he has competed at, you know, the highest level of collegiate competition, all four years, but winning three out of the four. You know, he's definitely improved all of us and all of our abilities. You know, I look at Henry Hooks. You know, he brings something really special on fight night in terms of, you know, I think from a psychological standpoint, he brings a certain confidence in the fighters that not only do the fighters feel confident knowing he's the one walking out with them, but they also feel this sense of, you know, not wanting to ever let him down and really perform well for him. And I always think he plays a really good role in that last, you know, last hour before going out and actually competing. I think a lot of my, you know, mental and psychological prep and those things are really just through the objective data. This is what we've done in the past. This is what we've seen work. You know, we're on track. You know, even like Danny Roberts, for instance, we've done the exact same thing, you know, for the past four camps. We went in and just did our 3-week evaluation, and our numbers are exactly the same as last time. And yet some of his performance measures in terms of power and things like that are a little bit higher. So, you know, it's just objective data for me. I'm a very objective person like that, where, it's not one of those things. If it's right, I'm going to show you. If it's wrong, I'm going to show you, and we're going to fix it. And so that's kind of my approach to it, is being very objective, where we have some of these other coaches that have competed at a really high level that, you know, have that ability to carry that over into the fight. And ultimately, I think it's just confidence in preparation and all of those pieces going into that fight.
Having spoken to Algieri for the second time and then Dr. Jose Antonio, they both were highlighting the effects of creatine for brain activity and cognitive function and also protecting the brain, which I was unaware of before they started dropping those bombs. And my question derives from a guy like Michael Johnson. Man, if anybody follows Michael Johnson on social media listening, they know that he puts videos of him sparring, and he is a monster. And you look at the way he trains, and you're like, there's no way that him and this guy, they're sparring together, like each other, and then they're like close friends. And then you have a guy like, in most recent years, Cerrone, who's been really vocal about, you know, he doesn't do any heavy sparring leading up to his fights anymore. From a coaching perspective, with a guy like Donald and a guy like Michael Johnson, now, you know, Johnson's one of your guys, whose job is it as the coach? Do you guys gauge the intensity? Or you guys ever have to be like, hey, boys, man, you know, you guys are going to kill each other, tone it back a little bit? Or is it just all out, you just leave it up to the fighter?
You know what? Definitely. I will say with the coaching staff that, you know, I've been working with some of these guys for quite a while. You know, we've really progressed. Even our periodization, we periodize our practice schedule. We periodize our camp schedule. Each individual, based on their fight dates, have different practice schedules and things like that. So a lot of the stuff that you see on social media, obviously it's the most intense of the intense moment that you see out there. But yeah, we regulate these things, and things are done really safely, even from a strength and, you know, and that's the nice thing, I guess, for my role as a strength and conditioning coach. When people ask me what I have to do the most on a daily basis, it's adapt. I mean, I have to adapt. I have to be the one, because I have the schooling to understand physiology and recovery and things like that, to see the amount of volume that's being done during practice, the amount of contact and all of those things, and have to be able to adjust for the athletes, have to be able to adjust their schedules throughout camp and all of those things. But yeah, you know, those things are done really safely. A lot of things that we do are based on previous camps, what has worked in the past, different experience. You know, we have different guys in our camp that do spar different amounts, different times during the camp and things like that. Everybody is definitely a little bit different. In terms of a scientific approach, we've been doing some work. We've had a researcher down here off and on throughout you know, throughout the past 6 months, Dr. Gabe Sanders, he's a sports scientist out of Northern Kentucky. And we've been doing a lot of tracking down here using GPS technology, some of the heart rate stuff that we've done in the past. And we're really starting to find really good trends in different things like different metrics. People that are familiar with the GPS technology, it's, you know, looks at movement, acceleration, deceleration, change in direction, metabolic load, heart rate, and different things like that. We've been able to really put a good grasp on what is the right amount of volume per practice, per session, and things like that. And we've got a really good grasp on it. We've even with like people like Algieri, a very individualized sport, we've been able to come up with, based on Algieri's movement, based on his output and things like that, we've been able to basically predict how much water he's losing per round, per session, how much his temperature has increased per round, per session, depending on his, you know, heavy bag and things like that, along with a lot of other variables that have helped us to really keep these athletes, you know, performing optimally. You know, I think this question, it's definitely a big question. I don't want to ramble on, but I think when you look at this whole sports science shift and different things like that, people have been so focused on injury prevention where, you know, if we see a certain amount, we're going to see injury. And to be honest with you, I don't think that's what we're seeing. I think we're missing a step there. I think performance optimization is what we should be looking for. I think when an athlete's not performing optimally, that's when we're starting to see injury. So I think there's this kind of this mishap where people are looking at injury prevention and we might not be able to get, might not be getting the most out of their actual performance. And in a sport like MMA, where you're in a very short camp, preparing for preparation, you know, you need to be functioning very high, especially from a neurological standpoint. Every session has to be very high performance because those very few sessions are going to carry over into your performance. What you're doing during that preparation is going to show come fight night, performance night. So, you know, it's crazy to look at this shift, but we're really starting to understand when our athletes are performing the best and being able to cut them. And then again, you know, from a coaching standpoint, our coaches have to be able to see that with their own eyes as well. And I think we've really come up with a very good system. And really, you look at the athletes that we've been working with together, looking at the results, looking at the wins versus losses, looking at the very minimal number of injuries that we're actually seeing throughout our camp, you know, it's really speaking for itself.
Yeah, Corey, just to backtrack for a sec, I just had a quick question just about the weight cut. The part I wanted to speak to you about was putting weight back on and just the process of what you do in terms of, is it hydrolytes or actual food and how you actually monitor them putting weight back on? Because the one that really stands out for me was a few years ago now was when Oscar De La Hoya versus Manny Pacquiao. And they fought at 147 and De La Hoya hardly put any weight back on for the actual fight. And obviously he struggled and obviously they did something wrong. And, you know, you work with athletes every week. Do you see some of them really struggle to put weight back on? And, like, what's the protocols that you guys go through to actually put that weight back on?
You know, Tristan, I think that's such a good question and a very overlooked part of this entire process. You know, when you look at this process, it's really during the camp is when the bulk of your diet should be taking place and those, you know, dietary changes. Like you should, you know, Chris Algieri always says something about basically making weight during camp. You know, you're making it easier on yourself by doing the right things over that camp and making that just as much as an important part as the training and all that stuff. But to go to your question, I truly believe that people look at that rehydration process or overlook that rehydration process. And after that scale, as if like the victory's already been done, we made weight. And I'll be completely honest with you where I truly, truly believe a bad weight cut will have less effect on your performance than a bad rehydration after the weight cut. I think that's the most crucial thing that any athlete can do is that moment that they step off the scale until that moment they fight in terms of getting them back to exactly what they were throughout that entire camp process. To keep it kind of simple, I'll just kind of, you know, I'll just give it a very basic thing. When you look at this, what's going to be the first thing the athlete probably does? They're probably going to manipulate their macronutrients. Realistically, probably decreasing carbs just a bit when you look at this entire process. As the weight starts to come down, the training's going to increase. You know, depending on how severe of a weight cut, we're either going to go with something very low intensity to kind of preserve the nervous system, or we're going to go with something high intensity if the cut's a little bit easier and they're a little bit more on track. You know, basically after that, we're going to eliminate water along with the electrolytes that, you know, looking at plasma volume and those kind of things, looking at what the water is going to hold in the body. We're going to step on the scale. When we get off the scale, we're going to work backwards. First thing we're going to do, we're going to put those electrolytes and fluid back into the body to that certain percent that we lost it from, you know, the night before within that past 24 hours. When we touch that spot on the scale is when we're going to start introducing the carbohydrates and when we're going to start introducing what physical activity and what protocols we may do to start to stimulate the other systems of the body, especially the nervous system and those kind of things. So it's really just one of those things. It's an order of operations. We take out the carbs, we change the exercise, we decrease the water, and we do that in reverse. We put the water, we put the sodium back in, we put the solid food back in to a certain point, and we start moving the way we did before, trying to bring ultimately just, you know, it's a temporary thing, the way we look at the weight cut and this weight cutting system. Yeah. We're temporarily bringing it down, and we're putting them right back to normal as fast as we possibly can, as effective, as efficient as we possibly can.
Corey, do you make the lads, like, report into you, like, every 2 hours saying, Corey, I'm now this, Corey, I'm having issues, I'm not pissing, like...
We're either on the phone the entire time, I'm in communication with the coach the entire time, or I'm there, depending on the severity, you know, whether or not we're on track and those kind of things. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't had to travel a lot because, you know, everybody that we're working with is bought in. You know, we're doing it right. And it's been nice to be able to stay back and just keep preparing all of these other guys that are fighting well while the other guys are performing and stuff like that to make sure that everybody goes this smoothly. You know, for me, that's a win when I don't have to be involved in the travel and in that process because everything's already on point, everything's laid out. It's great. But yeah, like you said, I do have them check in basically every morning, every pre-workout, every post-workout, every night throughout that, especially throughout their water manipulation, their water load, and different things like that. I'll use that data along with some of the water composition data that I've collected throughout camp, looking at how much they hold, how much they're losing during practice, how much they're losing during sessions and things like that. And basically we just have a percentage system based off of those numbers when we start to beat them back up. So, you know, they'll have a plan in their hand going into fight week, and then that plan just changes slightly throughout the week depending on how the cut goes.
Yeah. Corey, have you ever had anyone that just wouldn't stop going to the toilet or had stomach cramps and they just couldn't eat? What do you do then?
You know, I actually think that we saw that more with the IV, where you're just putting, you know, people were putting that liquid and fluid back into them so quickly that their body wasn't absorbing it. And yeah, through this, we've seen that. Some of the things that we've done that have actually helped with us, we've done some experimenting with probiotics and different things like that, looking at absorption where, you know, it's still an issue, but at least we're getting a little bit better absorption and things like that within the gut. And so that's somewhat helped throughout the process. You know, and to be honest with you, it's, you know, we've had different issues. Biggest thing that we can do when we look at these athletes, you know, when we're in a situation like that is how can we get these electrolytes in there? How can we increase the glycogen stores as much as possible before the spike time, even if it's not solid food and different things like that? What supplements use. You know, we do a lot of work with things like Botargo and Scratch and different supplements like that. And realistically, I'll be honest with you, the majority of the protocol is really geared towards supplementation rather than solid foods. So, you know, that stuff really, really works a lot. We work with a lot of good companies, you know, through different protein sources and things like that, that we do a lot with supplements rather than actual solid food, especially during that process.
Conversations like this is why MMA is my favorite sport. I've been watching it since jump. When guys were fighting guys with one glove on, you remember the boxer who fought in the UFC? He wore one glove, and because of that, there's so much room for growth. Even the first time TK and I spoke to you, Corey, the landscape has changed so much in a year and a half. And I was watching Lomachenko's Instagram, and he posted this digital pad. It was like a reaction speed sort of sensory board where it's lighting up colors and different patterns, and then it's recording his reaction to it. And it just had me thinking, holy shit, man, this is like what they predicted in Rocky IV with Drago. Like, you know, you just put your fighter in a lab and you just test the reaction. He is coming back, man. He looks good too. And so my question is, Corey, put your visionary cap on. You're working side by side some of the most dangerous killers in the world and one of the most, you know, brutal sports in the world. Where is the biggest room for growth? And where do you see, is it the nutrition? Is it the recovery? Is it the refuel? Is it the technology? Is it the preparation? Where do you feel that next step that's going to take MMA to the next level is?
I think for this sport to keep evolving, and I think really if we just kind of reflect on even our conversation today, I still think the missing information is in the nutrition, the weight cuts and the rehydration. I mean, I feel like a lot of the questions that we've had today, I feel like when I'm on, you know, I'm speaking a lot now, a lot of different engagements through the International Society of Sports Nutrition, even though it's a sports nutrition society, so I should expect that. I think a lot of the misinformation is still in that nutrition aspect as to how to do this right. I think that has to be the priority. You know, people have to start realizing how to utilize food, rest, recovery to, you know, to decrease things like inflammation, to do things like you learn through creatine supplementation. To protect the brain. You know, I've recently taken a big interest, and I'll be honest, this could be another direction that the sport goes. You know, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but there's a lot of research out there looking at CTE, and they're starting to find different protein markers. A group out of Boston University found certain protein markers that showed a very strong correlation for CTE and even a regression towards years of training in living college football players or living football players in general. You know, one of our athletes, the late Jordan Parsons, he was the first MMA fighter to be diagnosed with CTE. So, you know, this is something looking at the future, something that I'm taking kind of a personal interest in and really, you know, have some things in the work to be able to, you know, monitor these athletes a little bit better to maybe make some enhancements in longevity, future life, thinking about these fighters after they're done fighting. And things like that, even things like supplementation, you know, you're looking at something like CBD oil, you're seeing that become extremely popular. Yep. And USADA even took that off their banned list for 2018. Good. So I think there's going to be definitely moving forward some very strong research and, you know, opportunity looking at that field in the sport as well. You know, visionary, there's so many things that can be improved. The sport's so new. I may be looking back at this conversation in 2 years thinking, what the hell is I talking about? But it's one of those things, doing the best with the resources and the abilities we have now for the betterment of the sport. And maybe that will be part of it. The fact that 2 years from now, we look back at everything I'm saying and saying, don't do that. But at least we learn from this. I don't know. But, you know, it's really interesting to look at where the sport's going. And in my opinion, it's in its infancy right now. And it can only progress and get better.
Exciting.
Yeah. Hey, Corey, you mentioned supplements, man. Me and Johnny were talking before the show about maybe the possible maybe overuse and over-reliance on supplements. And most of the athletes I know, they talk about being time poor, but then I see them always on PlayStation and they're always on social media. So they're not time poor at all. Do we over-rely on supplements, man?
I don't think so. I think the majority of – when you look at kind of the majority of the diets, nutrition plans, even fads, MMA, not MMA, that you know, different sports that you look at, I think you've seen pretty similar trends in all of these kind of diet trends being deficient in one macronutrient or a certain – whatever the case might be. You know, like I saw this thing looking at all these different diets and – to meet all, like looking at, I want to say it was the DASH diet, the one that's very low in sodium, and they were looking at paleo and different things. And honestly, I don't quote me, but I just basically the gist of it was in order to meet the recommended daily allowance of all of these different vitamins and, you know, the daily recommendations, that you would have to consume something like 40,000 calories, follow that guidelines to be able to meet all of those things. So in my opinion, I don't think we over-rely on supplements at all, because I do think a lot of these trends and a lot of these dietary practices that some of our athletes are following, I think it's impossible for them to meet the demands of the sport without use of supplements. Besides that, I think when you look at certain things like post-workout anabolic windows and different things like that, yeah. These guys are traveling. Yeah. You know, they're traveling all around South Florida, and it's not easy to get around down here. You know, you might be leaving practice and maybe not getting home for 90 minutes if you're really not going to utilize that time period for supplementation. You know, without supplements, then you're probably going to be missing out on some of the hormonal changes and performance things that, you know, we need for, you know, their next session and all of those things.
Speaking to the general population, Corey, forget about the pro athlete, the general pop, the average guy like myself, like Tristan, what three? It's specifically talking to my clients, because I have a guy like you that I could get feedback from. What three supplements, if you had to pick three, that you would say a man in their 30s, working a full time job, training four times a week, you know, just your average everyday Joe, if you had to pick three supplements that they would take on a daily basis, what would those be?
Creatine, whey protein, and fish oil, all the way. All three of those, very, very strong research lines, and all three of those products have shown benefits for muscular composition, hormones, heart health, brain health. The list goes on and on. It's definitely going to be those three. Those are the big three. Even with athletes, if an athlete's not on those three things, you know, we're in trouble.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Are any of the lads either vegan or vegetarian?
Abel is.
Yeah, Abel Trujillo. I know he's vegan. I saw he's performing soon. Nobody else that's working with our camp as of this point right now is vegan or vegetarian.
That's a tough thing, eh? Just getting
all your nutrients. He's a monster. And his nickname is Killer.
He does. He looks like a bodybuilder.
Yeah, Abel, man. And he's made some really good adjustments. And, you know, he's, and I'll be honest with you, you know, my time spent working with him and things like that, I think it was a really big learning process for both of us, learning, you know, the adaptations he had to make to training and things like that. Without the meat and the protein sources and the things that come with that, you know, and along with myself, where obviously as a coach, I can't say, even though I think there are maybe in terms of performance, there's obviously research out there showing that, you know, protein, meat, and different things like that can show benefit. It's not for me to disagree or argue. It's me as a coach to learn more and be able to support and make sure that we're doing everything we can to meet the needs of the athlete and support their vision and, you know, their stance on things like that.
Yeah, Corey, I've heard you speak recently about the use of pineapple, man, and its benefit. Can just for the listeners out there, even for them, what's the benefit of eating a pineapple, and where would you include that in your kind of your daily eating?
There's a lot of cool things that we're using right now that are very natural. A lot of this I've learned, you know, through Algieri, a lot of his research and stuff like that. He's been a big component for these things. Pineapple, the biggest thing that we're going to do with pineapple and its biggest role in terms of our camp structure is going to be that anti-inflammatory response. We're going to place that somewhere after the second workout. So that would be kind of our role there, the idea for regeneration moving into the next day. Even some of the other cool food things that we've really done, looking at certain nitrates and things like that, you know, a lot of the research out there on pomegranate and beetroot and things like that, improving oxygen, aerobic capacity and things like that. You know, so we've done a lot with that, you know, and that's been great to learn and see the research and watch this develop within our athletes. So definitely, you know, like an athlete that's banged up and goes through contact, even, you know, general population, a laborer or something like that, you can definitely get a really strong, you know, recovery response with pineapple. Mm.
Did you want to ask me about the green supplement?
The question we were going to ask was just more on like the micronutrient level. There's a supplement that I was taking for a while. It was called Vital Greens, and it was marketing and being promoted as all natural, plant-based, vegan, 88 different fruits, vegetables, probiotics, enzymes, grains, all that good stuff. And I guess, Corey, the question is, when you're taking a supplement like that, is there kind of like a law of diminishing returns, and is that too much, like, of too little of one thing, or is there a benefit if you were to take a supplement like that?
I think there's always going to be a benefit. I think your body will do a good job at at rejecting or getting rid of whatever it is that you don't use. So I'm never a component against things like that. I mean, you know, thinking about, you guys had Dr. Antonio on there, and he was talking about some of the crazy shit that he's done with high protein and five times the daily recommended allowance and, you know, and things like that. And, you know, if you actually look on there, I'm one of the authors on the majority of those papers with him. So I'm sitting in the lab with him for a lot of this stuff. You know, it's one of those things, we're watching the body. What's the body going to do? It's not going to have necessarily an adverse effect. It's just going to rid itself of it. You might get some wasted energy and different things like that to come along with it. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, I don't see a harm or a detriment to something like that.
Yeah, that guy's found like the fountain of youth or something.
What an awesome dude, man. Thanks for that hookup.
How old is that guy?
He's like 90. He's a vampire.
He looks 40.
Yeah, Dr. Jose's a beast.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a colleague of mine, actually. You know, he's at Nova Southeastern as well. You know, he'll be the head of the department. So it's been nice spending some good time with him over the past, you know, 6 years that I've been there.
Yeah, it's been great spending some time with you today as well, man. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Corey, before we let you go, everyone get following Corey. Best way is either Instagram or Twitter. He's Dr. C. Peacock. He's very active on there, so get following, guys.
Yeah, Corey, we got a big 2 weeks coming up. OHIO, big dog.
Hey, super excited for this weekend. It's going to be interesting.
Ranked, yeah, we're ranked number 8. We got a couple big games, not out of it yet.
Is Michigan this weekend?
Yeah. No, yeah. Michigan and Wisconsin.
Commercial.
Yeah, brother, I appreciate you sitting down with us again, man. Corey, you be good, man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
Johnny, that was Corey Peacock, man.
That was a fun one, man. It's always good when we get to open these shows with rapport from a former guest.
Yeah, it is. It's always great. And I think for Corey, he taught us a lot today and some great... No, the whole cutting weight process is not an easy thing to do. And I think you broke it down really well today.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and some of the other things, like, I guess people are going to start eating more pineapple, but it's valuable.
Yeah, that was the one that I was shocked with, because we have a little produce market right next to our gym, and they always have every morning freshly prepped pineapple. And I always thought...
You're ahead of the time.
I was like, why? That's just an odd fruit to have prepped. You have just pineapple. It's not mixed with anything. And he brought that up, and I'm like, oh, shit, they know something I don't. Fuck, I wish I would have knew that. But, yeah, I'm going to start eating it. And I didn't know that it had, you know, positive benefits. But the weight cut thing is complex. There's so many issues in MMA that are just going to keep evolving because the sport is so new. And it's awesome to have a guy and a colleague now and a mate like Corey who's in the trenches.
He's in the trenches.
Yeah, and it's like kind of like our insider. Like, you know, if I have questions.
He's honest, too.
Yeah, a couple months ago, you know, I had a question about some sort of technology that was coming up with fighters, and I tweeted him. He gets right back to me all the time, and you know, he's always like, hey Johnny, or hey Tristan, I think this guy'd be a good suit for your show. And he's just a good dude, man, and it's always good to support other guys who are pushing it to the next level. And you know, it's awesome to watch his further progression.
Yeah, that's kind of that industry, you know. The industry needs to get behind guys like Corey, because they're the real brains trust of this thing, you know. Just because he doesn't put photos of himself naked on a social media and has 100,000 people does not mean that this is the guy that you want to be following. If you want a longevity and sustainability and things that are educationally tested and researched, well, he's going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Not off the bat, just maybe something that works for you that you think, because you got yourself in good shape, because you got great genetics, that everyone should be doing it. This guy knows what he's talking about.
It's a great point. You know, just because somebody... Don't judge people because of their social media followers, guys. That is the worst mistake you could do. This is the day after Thanksgiving in America, in Australia. I'm American, you guys know that. And my social media is just flooded with, like... And it's kind of unfortunate with guests that we've had on the show that I respect and have a lot of credibility for. But Black Friday sales and sign up now... You have 12 hours left to get 30% off of this, that, and the other thing. I'm glad that Corey doesn't do that. Like,
use your coupon code.
Yeah, dude, that makes me cringe, man. I'm not going to name drop because they're our boys, but I saw on Instagram they got into that marketing spiel. Look, we know we need to eat. We know we got to make money, but you'll never have to worry. Peacock is a guy that keeps it gangster. He keeps it research-based. He keeps it in the trenches. And I'll be pissed one day if I see him next year. Go to CoreyPeacock.com for your Black Friday sale and get 40% off of all your proteins, Elevith. That sort of thing. I'm so over that shit, man.
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
That was an excellent episode, Johnny. I'm really looking forward to the next one, too, with Chris Master, John. He's a little bit different to Corey. He's more from the academia.
Yeah, mechanisms and mechanical.
Now transferred into his own business side. So it's been interesting to see the different perspectives. Both
two PhDs.
Two PhDs, but different sort of backgrounds on to where they've come. So
basic guys like you and myself, Tristan, we just get smarter just by talking to these guys.
So. Oh, of course. Absolutely. So
that's a real reason why we do this.
Yeah, bring your notepad and pen just as the educational experience with Corey. It's going to be a great educational experience with Chris as well.
Yes, sir.
All right, Johnny, before we go, social media.
Simple, guys. Follow me, Johnny Stofko. I'll follow back.
There you go. He follows back.
I'll follow back. Shoot.
I'm Tristan Cannell.
Say what you want to say, Tristan.
So please follow us both across social media.
Yeah, buddy.
If you want to get in touch with us together, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com is probably the easiest way. Just shoot us an email and one of us will shoot you one back.
Yeah, we're individual, but we also come as a combo.
I thought you were going to say a couple.
How dare you?
You're weird.
I am creepy.
You are.
All right, guys.
All right, I got to go.
Peace. Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.